Welcome to Kidlit Happy Hour. Grab a drink, cozy up,
and explore storytelling with creative minds inside children's publishing and beyond.
Well, hey, Joanna.
Okay, hi, Caroline. Oh.
We didn't speak to one another yesterday, which felt destabilizing. So today I was like, Joe, are you there? Are you okay?
I had a really, 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 really full weekend of baseball practices, and it's my daughter's birthday tomorrow.
Yes.
And she's the birthday boss in my family. When it's your birthday, you get to be the birthday boss for the whole week. So you get to make all the decisions about how we spend our time within reason and what we eat. And she wanted a birthday party with her whole class.
Oh, look at that social vibe.
I'm not like a big party person personally, but you know, you will do anything outside your comfort zone for your kids. So we put together a party and it was great. I saw this idea on TikTok. I'm not even a big TikTok person, but I saw this funny Lunar New Year game where people put out a red envelope on a table. And you know those sticky hands?
Yeah.
Okay. And the videos I saw was like six dudes standing on a table with these long sticky hands. And it's like, go. And then they slap the hand. Everyone whips their hand. And then whoever whacks and sticks the money and it's get stuck to their hand, they get the money. So I ordered a bunch of sticky hands, and then she really wanted a jungle theme. She loves animals. So I found these sticker sheets that they can make faces on animals, and the kids are like whacking them.
Oh, wait, that's so fun.
But it was just at a playground, because I just have feelings about, I don't have the funds to pay like $1,000 to go to a venue to jump around on a trampoline. Yeah. So we just stood at the park and they run around, and it was fun. And we had a pinata. We have lots of family in town. So like after all the activities, family would come over. We played mahjong. It was really fun.
I'm particularly tender about it because I have such beautiful memories of your kids' birthday parties over the past years. And I remember one for Isla, maybe it was last year or the year before, when you had everyone come to the playground and you hid all these bubble wands everywhere across the playground, and you built it up, and all the kids were like, what's hidden? Scavenger hunt who? And then they all just sprinted around and grabbed them and blew bubbles, and it was so magical and lovely and exactly the way birthday parties should feel. So no talking down your birthday party game, because
I'm just like, what's like the simplest, easiest thing I can do to entertain children for 10 minutes and then they can play at the park?
Exactly.
But anyways, that was my weekend. It was very lovely.
Well, I wish we were there.
We missed you. Okay, well, how was your weekend? It's like a real catch up, since I actually have no idea what you did yesterday, which is very unusual.
It is so unusual. It was beautiful because all six of us were here. I did a reading at Old Town Books. If you're ever in the DMV area, Old Town Books is where it's at. It's in Old Town, Alexandria. We'd never been. It was so fun to be there and connect with the booksellers. And then we went down to the waterfront and just played games and ate and stared at each other and giggled, and it was great. It was warm, finally. Just one of those weekends that I dream about. And then it finally was here, and I tried to be present, soak it up.
I'm so glad. I really hope that in this upcoming season that he'll get to be home more.
I know. Wait, Joe, do you have something that you want to say about maybe a book that might be coming out in a month?
Oh, my book? Shoot, I was all getting geared up to talk about our book. But yes, I can talk about my book too. I was back here dancing like, yeah, we got to announce the book that we teased. Like,
okay, well, let's start with the fact that your book, We Who Produce Pearls, just got its first trade review. And I feel like it's one of those things. You have all these hopes and dreams. The team that's worked on the book feels so good about it. You're so hopeful, but you have no idea how it's going to be received. And then you get the first trade review. And how did it go?
It was a star from Publishers Weekly. I was like giddy. I was on a call, actually, our first regional meeting for Authors Against Book Bans for my region. I got a text from my editor, who is out on maternity, and it was like, we got a trailer. And I was like, I couldn't scream because I was on the call. But I think it's exactly that. Like, I am really, 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 really proud of this book. I think it's everything that I wanted to write in a book around Asian identity.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, but up until that point, like, I feel like I poured my heart and soul into studying my history. I learned so much. I know it's obviously not everything, but it's ultimately about like our strength and our power and how we've always stood up and spoken out. And that was such a huge aha for me, because I just didn't know any of my history, not here, so little of it in any parts of Asia, because we just don't learn any of that at all. And so researching this book was life-changing for me. I think it altered the way I see myself and the way I see my people. And then to try to take all of that learning and to put it into a 500-word picture book was, it's a little bit like, I can't believe those words came from me, because I don't know that I'm the one who, you know, that feels very either woo-woo or a little too spiritual, religious, but that's truly how it feels for me. So I'm just really proud of it. And I think Amanda Pamunapakya's art is unreal. It gives me chills. And I know reviews are reviews, and sometimes you're happy you got them, and sometimes you're not happy you got them, and sometimes you wish there were more, sometimes you wish there were more stars. And in the end, I was trying to explain to Amanda what it means, because she was like, does this mean there will be more sales? And I'm like, so in the end, it might not mean anything, but it's just a nice to have. So I was just super grateful. And the book is out on April 16th. You can pre-order it online.
And that you're creating these Instagram videos that dive into this rich, rich back matter and thinking about the questions that are posed and diving into that history, which I feel like they're priceless, these videos you're creating. So in case you're listening and you haven't seen it, go check out Joe's Instagram and then pre-order the book and get ready. There are more stars in your picture. Like, I will give you 1,000 stars, 1,000,000 stars, zero surprise, but so it just gets you excited. Just like revving my engine, getting ready.
Yeah. I feel a little corny making these videos because I'm not like a TikTok content creator or whatever, but learning the history really changed me.
Yeah.
And that's why there was a back matter, because I was pushing the editor, like, we can't not put it in, because people don't know this history because it truly has been so erased. So no one is going to know how deep each of these verses and stanzas and how meaningful each of these
phrases are. So many layers.
If you don't know the history.
Yeah.
So at least hopefully offering an entry point in the back matter. And and then for me, I'm like, how often do I actually dive in and study the back matter? So I'm like, well, let me just make it a little bit easier for folks who may say they want to and then run out of time or whatever.
Yes. And they're so accessible. There was one you did about where the name Bing Cherries came from, who Bing is. Yeah. And I love Bing Cherries. I have so many childhood memories going to the farmer's market with my dad. And I had no concept of who he was and his story and how much that connects to the story of our country's history and Asian American identity. And so all to say, it's brilliant. I know you feel corny. They are corny, but I think we need more of that.
Yeah. But also there's a picture book. I can't remember who wrote it or who's illustrating it, but there is a picture book coming up about Bing Cherries and the history.
Really?
Yeah. Which I'm super excited about. And I think there's like a bunch of the points that I'm talking about here. There are just a lot of books that I'm like, oh, well, there's a picture book coming out here. And also like Christina Sundhornvath, she has a book coming out. And the book that I used to do a lot of the research for this book, she wrote it in a young reader's version. And it's also coming out this spring. So more on all of that to come, but it feels good to be adding more to this growing canon of voices. And I feel like all these books really go well together. So you should just pre-order all of them.
Get them all. And also just to set the record straight, I say corny with more love than I know how to communicate. Just want to make sure that was not.
I'm so offended right now. I'm going to hang up the microphone.
That could not be less of a pejorative. Okay,
but they also are corny.
Do you know what the word corny just brought up for me? I had completely blacked out this memory. Is like years ago, I posted something that I got a bunch of crap for it. And a stranger wrote something really nasty. And I DM'd them back when I did stuff like that, like engaged strangers. And I was like, hey, is there more you want to say? I'd be happy to listen if you want to say something. And he was like, whoa, didn't expect to actually talk to the human, you know, sorry I said that. The truth is, I just thought your post was super corny. I was like, it is corny. I agree. He's like, oh, all right. Well, sorry about that. Have a good day. I'm like, bye-bye, sir. It was so funny. Anyway.
I love that you did that. And also,
I don't know that I love that I did that.
This is probably why you're not active anymore. Okay, sorry. We digress.
Okay, but wait, you also were excited to share about other book news, which I
can we talk about that one? I know we've already talked about it on the podcast, but we finally got to announce that we're making a book together with Dan Santat.
Oh,
so super excited.
That felt so good to get to share widely, and just Dan's the guy. He's just the guy.
We have had this book deal since a year ago.
Yep.
We wrote the book more than a year and a half ago. I feel like it probably started 2 years ago. It's a journey we will share more about, because it's really a winding journey for this book. But anyways, that's all to say, more to come on that book. We're super excited. It's going to be out next year, In the fall.
Right? In the fall, I think so too.
Okay. Wait, we need to talk about this episode. We totally digressed. Today, who do we have on the podcast, Caroline?
None other than Tavita Pritchard, who I happen to be married to, and who is the father of my children, is our guest.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. How do you feel? How did it feel interviewing him?
And then you know what?
I had a great time, but I think if I was in your shoes, I would have, you know, I don't know how it felt for you. I feel like you just have such a unique perspective of you are the person who knows him best in the whole world. And then he's not going to put 100% of that out for a public podcast, even though he's the most charming human ever. So like, how did it feel for you?
Yeah. You know, it was so funny in a way that in none of the other conversations I felt this way. I think it took me like half an hour to jump in. Like it was you two talking and I was kind of just listening and I was way more removed from the experience. I kept nudging him like, no, wait, tell this version or like no, tell the story when you were younger. Like micromanaging his experience of being on this podcast is so annoying of me. And then when I let myself jump in and treat him like a guest and not like my husband, I will just say it was so sweet to sit next to him, have both of us be crowded around a little microphone. And to get to just watch him talk about his love of the sport, I feel like I'm so critical, obviously and rightly, of the NFL and the way that organizations have come and made a mess of people's pure love of a sport. Like if you strip all of that away from it, it's just a game, you know, that people love that brings people together. And that's how Tavita sees it. And he works through the other pieces as best he can. And I think he has big dreams about how to be more disruptive. But all to say, like his true love of the game, and you'll hear him talk about it. I'm proud of the person he is. So it felt really beautiful to get to sit next to him, even if I was like elbowing, you know, doing the micromanaging thing as I did. Like, tell the other story or like say
it back to that time when you were a kid.
Yes.
Okay. I love you and I love him. And actually, I mean, you know this, I love asking him questions about football.
Why do you think that is?
I love how he explains it. I think it's because it's this whole planet of things I don't understand. Yeah. But I really do see the power. And I'm a sucker for like inspiring sports movies, even if it's Disney-fied and whatever, like the human interest story of overcoming. But I love talking to him about it and understanding the game better or the dynamics and the staffs and across the industry. But I do think that we were interviewing him at a really interesting time. We couldn't talk about, there were a lot of big questions.
Yes. Good
of
point.
Where you all were going to end up living. You were like being interviews, getting all kinds of interviews.
Oh, that's so true, Joe. That's so true. This was interviewed right after the football
Remember,
season.
He was supposed to hop on an interview with someone right after. I don't know.
Wait, like for context for the listeners, at the end of their football season, most of the staff was fired. And so Tavita was in the middle of a bunch of interviews with different teams across the NFL and managing different offers. So we thought we were going to move. And then ultimately what ends up happening after this interview is that he got an offer to stay at the Commanders. So we're staying, which is thank the good Lord. We don't have to move again. But you're right. It was an interesting time where it was like,
And you couldn't talk about anything. You couldn't be more specific about the conversations you're having. And so I guess that's one thing I want to say is like, now you know what is going to happen next year. He's staying on at the Commanders. He's going to continue on as the QB coach. And I just think that contextually, because I feel like there were a lot of things he couldn't answer fully because it was sort of like, there's a lot up in the air. Right. So anyways, that was really interesting. And the other thing I would just add here is I think that this is a great episode because he does such a good job as a guest, bringing it back to writing from his world to the writing world. Like you both have such unique perspectives into each other's worlds. But I feel like just a note to ourselves, but as our listeners continue to listen, hopefully one reason, and I know we've talked about this before, but the reason that I personally think it's so fascinating to bring in guests who are from other fields and professions is because when we are able to step outside of just craft and talking about the things that are within our field, it really pushes our creativity and our thinking to be able to draw insights from other people's expertise.
Yep.
And I think this really shows up in Tavita's conversation.
I listening back to this one, the first half is pretty like his story, football oriented. It gets a little bit football wonky in moments.
Which I love.
But the second half feels a lot more kind of interconnected and drawing connections. Like we're really talking about things like process and how that matters as a writer or believing in your method and that sort of thing. So all right, we should just dump into it instead of talking.
I know. Okay, sorry. We're just like high level analyzing, but we're super excited. Excited to hear from you after you hear this episode. So enjoy.
Enjoy.
okay, I want all the updates, but right now we have questions. But first, I have an intro. In case y'all don't know who this lovely human is, I'm going to introduce
him. Look at his plenum.
Handsome Tavita. Ahem. Tavita Pritchard is the lucky man married to one Caroline Cusin Pritchard, who is a brilliant author and gem of a human. He just completed his first season in the NFL as the QB coach for the Washington Commanders. He played quarterback at Stanford from 2006 to 2009, then coached in various roles at Stanford, joining as a graduate assistant and working his way up to offensive coordinator. Most notably, during his time at Stanford, he befriended one Joanna Ho, also a lovely human, and kidlet author through his wife, the aforementioned Caroline. They began their friendship during the pandemic, during which time both Pritchards continually reminded Joanna, me, that it was highly unusual to see Tavita so often during the season, which I did not fully understand until in-person season began and Tavita fell off the face of the planet. Another enormous accomplishment of Tavita's is teaching Joanna, a football dodo brain, about the game and being personally responsible for her, my weekly Google refreshing of game updates, which I have never done before in the history of my life for football. The rest of Tavita's long and impressive bio is filled with the names of famous football players you may know, but I don't, with whom he played or who he recruited and coached. Most importantly, he makes time to coach his son's basketball team every Sunday. He is an incredible father. He makes the best chocolate chip cookies and a mean challah. He writes quiz questions for his kids and leaves them on post-it notes on their lunches because he leaves to work before they wake up. My children are obsessed with him. He is universally beloved and one of the best humans on earth. Welcome to the podcast, Tavita.
Wow.
Oh, it's all about me, basically.
Can we end it right now and just go with that? So I feel like I can't live up to that intro.
I just got teary. For those who aren't watching, Joanna's in a full-blown Snuggie suit with a hoodie on and a furry, and she's giving the best intro ever. I'm overwhelmed with love.
Okay, but that's because my power was out for the last, 2 hours, and it was very cold in my house. So here we are.
Back to aforementioned Coach Pritchard. Babe, how about that intro?
I mean, like I said, I feel like it's kind of like when you meet people that you hear about. I feel like I'm not going to live up to that intro.
Well, we'll see. Only time will tell.
Yeah, well.
Your guys' speaking skills are amazing.
I almost said, and he got me to go to Stanford football game.
That may be my biggest single accomplishment was getting you to follow football.
I think that's pretty big. One day I will learn all the names. Okay, ready? Are we ready to jump in? Because I have questions for you.
I feel like I'm just a fly on the wall.
You can't be a fly on the wall.
You can't jump in. We have to ask.
I was actually just about to ask because I am a kidlit happy hour stan. You are. And I know all the things that should be happening
I was so excited to jump in.
I don't know how this goes or is supposed to go.
Okay. Thank you. Tavita is our biggest fan. He listens to all the episodes and then he quotes them throughout the week to his family.
I have to find a video of this. I walked downstairs and Tavita was rocking the baby asleep and all the other kids, the three other kids were eating dinner. And he was saying, well, as I listen to in kidlit happy hour, Auntie Joanna and Mama were talking and starts quoting one of the guests. And
it's good content, y'all. It's good content. What can I say?
Okay, so babe, what are you bringing to our happy hour to drink today?
That's a great question. Right now I have an iced coffee with some kind of homemade cold foam.
You're fancy, jeez.
Fancy, and Caroline can attest to this. Almost all my adult life as a coffee drinker was like black coffee exclusively. And so even Caroline has been surprised by my recent engagement with other forms of coffee. Because this year, I drank a lot of coffee because I worked a lot of hours.
Yes, you did.
I just needed to spruce it up a little bit. Yep. So I started venturing out and trying some different things in my coffee. And so here we sit with a spruced up
coffee. I have a recommendation. As the woman who
really has never had a sip of coffee in her life.
Okay, but this is false because when I went to Vietnam last year, I sinned. I reported to my, but don't worry, everyone knows. I had Vietnamese coffee and then I had coconut coffee and it's so freaking good, except for it immediately upset my stomach and I had a poo emergency on the way to the airport and I'm never going to do it again. But I've tried to make it like decaf at home. Whatever. The point is, I'm not a coffee expert, but it was so yummy. But if you're trying to expand your horizons, take it from the Mormon who had a digestive issue right after I had it, that you should try that.
That's a great recommendation. I will absolutely try that.
It's so good. And Vietnamese coffee is like egg foam and egg cream, all this deliciousness. Caroline, what are you drinking?
Well, I'm drinking
I feel like I'm in charge today.
I know, honestly, I'm just sitting back and I'm really admiring what's happening right now. I've got the buzz, you know? There's no booze in my drink, but I'm feeling buzz. So shall we?
I'm drinking an iced rooibos tea with fruit in it, like honey. Ooh. It's like, it's so yummy.
Gorgeous.
I was going to say out of a mason jar too. It's very chic.
Yeah, I know. It's not on purpose, but okay. Here's our big question. The big question for you is, how do you polish a story? But we're going to actually not start there because I feel like we need to backtrack a little before we get to that question. So in the world of football, which as we know, I'm a big expert in, what is the story you are most interested in telling, whatever that means to you?
I think in considering different directions I looked at going today when we talked about stories within football or within what I do, there's a lot of avenue. Hopefully something that comes through as we have this conversation is my belief about football and athletics is such a people-driven thing and community. When thinking about storytelling or stories in our sport, you can't decouple it from the amazing people that color the football staffs and the teams and the support staffs and the fans and, you know, all different things. It's part of why, you know, the NFL or college football or all those different levels are so beloved, is because when you look at like the different human interest stories and the journeys that people have gone on from where they started as players or, you know, in their coaching journey, the stories to tell are all the individual stories. And then they become collective stories, put those pieces together and they become a team or an organization. And then you look at their successes and triumphs and tribulations and all those different things. It's so fascinating to me to see the different stories and people coming together.
That's so interesting, because when I think of football and the NFL, I'm not like, humans. It feels so money driven. It feels so problematic at every level. I will say, for the people who don't know, I feel like talking to you and your dad shifted for me and under specifically for football. What you're talking about, like the power it has to bring community together, which I see, but I'm like seeing it cynically. So can you talk more about where you see your own role? You specifically in this huge ecosystem of multiple layers of multiple individual stories, like what are you crafting in your work?
Yeah, absolutely. I think both of us use the word community. And I think that's something in my life, in my story, in my journey, that's been so central. I guess a little bit of background about my family and my upbringing is I come from a really big family.
How big, Tavita?
I have 10 siblings.
Joanne's an honorary one, so you should just...
Yeah, so like 10 and a half or 10 and three quarters, depending on how you cut it. Yeah. My cultural background is my dad's side of the family is from American Samoa. And so for those of you that don't know about the Samoan community or people from the Pacific, very community-driven, very familial people. I grew up in a culture that really valued doing things together and solving problems together. It's just such a direct correlation to what I do in team sports, right? It's the mindset of team over individual, right? That's central to the Samoan culture. We call it the Fa'asamoa, is the Samoan way. As I think about like my role in football, it's so intertwined with my identity as a Samoan man. Coming into the NFL from college, I kind of had a preconceived notion that it was going to be all business and it was just a bottom line thing and it was going to be transactional. And I was very pleasantly surprised that much of what I loved about college was still very much present in my relationships and the dynamic here in the NFL. Mm-hmm. I had an amazing quarterback room of a few guys that I really connected with. And, you know, I see my role nowadays as connecting with people, players, staff, to help us achieve this ultimate goal, which of course, like if you talk about bottom line, it's winning.
Yeah.
Right? But at the same point in time, it's developing people, it's enriching lives, whether it's fans or guys who are trying to go make money and provide for their families and create legacies for themselves as they see it from their own perspective. So like my role in that is, I believe the strongest communities, the strongest relationships develop the best teams and the most successful teams. So how I see my role in that is all those people and personalities and stories converging in a way that creates synergy to be able to go win, but like revel and live in that space and not focus on the winning, but the winning becomes a byproduct of
what you're creating.
What you're creating and the connective tissue that you're...
It feels like, from what I understand of your home at 2 a.m. out at 5 a.m. schedule, that it's so focused, like the next game, you're winning. In your daily processing of this story, of this community you're building, that how much is it like, I'm creating community. Like, what's the story you're telling yourself in the weekly, in the daily? Because that feels like for you as a human, that's really the goal. And then the job is like every week you have a new team. You got to play. You got to win.
For sure. I think my initial reaction to that is we don't ever think about it enough. We're not ever intentional enough about it. Sometimes we as coaches, and probably even players too, get so in the weeds of the best plays or the training techniques or watching film. And every coach is different. Every staff is different. Every program, franchise, personality is different, to where I think I've seen it in varying degrees. And it's a balance, because I think at the end of the day, you can't just do team building exercises. You have to think about it as this ecosystem of like, what are we lacking? Oh, like we don't trust each other. Like the left guard doesn't trust what the center is saying. Like clearly there's something there, something related to our community or the connectivity. Like, I think that's where you really have to be intentional and address those things.
Okay, I will say, I feel like you haven't really talked about football for you as a kid. I'm just curious, as you were growing up and into the role that you now have, you're coaching at the highest level, what football has meant to your story. And then we can go into the polishing and the game plan and stuff.
We want to dive into your vulnerable soul.
Okay, well, I mean, because I think about like even my football journey early on, it was a connection to my dad. My dad coached. And so some of my earliest memories in football, some of my earliest memories, period, are going to the locker room where my dad was a coach and sitting there and watching film with him, or like getting ready for a game, or seeing him talk to the team, or like I was the ball boy on Friday night at the high school games, running the ball in with the jersey down to my ankles. It was such a huge part of my upbringing. I have memories of grown men coming up to my dad and telling them about the profound impact that he had on their lives because of things he said to them as their high school coach. I saw the impact that a coach has, but I also saw the community and the relationship that can be built through this sport and others, but this one specifically that I was drawn to for obvious reasons. It was a connection to my dad. It was a connection to my brothers, my cousins. And even as I got into my own playing and became really serious about wanting to go on and play in college and eventually the NFL, my dad's cousin, my Uncle Jack Thompson, is one of the known people,
legends.
See me nodding over here? I know you've told me about him before, but I'm like...
Nickname is the Throwing Samoan, right? He was the third overall pick in the 1979 NFL draft. Had an incredible career. Watching him, having him as a model for me as a quarterback growing up, like there was my dad and then there was my Uncle Jack who played the same position. And then Uncle Jack ended up training me. He was my primary quarterback coach. And I would drive up to Seattle like every week and go throw with him and train with him. And his son, Tony, one of my best friends, he and I became very close. And again, I've seen this game bring so many people together. And for me, it's created some of my closest relationships. You know, I mean, it's the reason I ended up at Stanford and we met. And, you know, I mean...
And we met as well.
And we met.
And back to that.
Hello.
And also, I feel like something you talk about too, is it's such a team sport. It doesn't matter if you have the best quarterback in the world.
That's right. I mean, I believe it's the greatest team sport in the world. I mean, I'm sure that's arguable. And I'm, of course, very biased. And I think about it in an offensive perspective, right? It's all constructive. Each piece, each of the 11 guys on the field, they have to do their job for a given play to be successful. Right? Because if they don't, like if the right tackle doesn't block, the quarterback doesn't have time to throw the ball, we're never going to get it done. If the receiver doesn't run the right route and he's not in his spot, the quarterback can't throw. You know, all these things that rely on each other in just a very like obvious, explicit way. It's so easy to turn on the film and be like, well, that didn't work because this part broke down, whether it's this person or a group of people or the teaching of it didn't come through in a way. That's the way that you look at the holistic nature of the team and the nuts and bolts of the football.
Can you actually take us either macro to micro or micro to macro, like from the nuts and bolts up to what you're talking about, your overall belief and lived experience of football and community and relationships, and then take us down to how that connects to polishing in general or starting at watching a tape? Yeah. How does that all connect?
Let's start more at the macro, right? I mean, the macro is to win the given championship in your league. It's to be at the top, right? So for us, it's go win the Super Bowl, which is happening this Sunday. Right. And so like to reach that, you know, you remember the Super Bowl, right?
I did.
Your hometown team.
Tomorrow. Well, yep.
You scaffold it, right? Like you think about the big goal. Okay. As a team, what is our North Star? What do we want to get to? Now, that's not just winning, because again, I believe winning is a symptom. So as we bring back in that element of wholeness, who do we want to be as a team? This goes back to your question a little bit of like, what story do you want to tell?
Yeah.
We watch a ton of film in football. There's so much visual feedback.
For all the football Joannas out there, can you tell people what it means to watch film?
Literally we film us running plays or even us working on a drill for a certain technique. Like if I want the quarterback to step a certain way when he makes a throw, we're going to film literally just the one quarterback doing that. You're filming small, small things.
Oh, I didn't realize it was that
deep. When you finish practice and you go inside and you watch it, you're critiquing those things. Hey, we did a grading good job film. Of it here. You're great. Yeah, that's when you hear like grading film. That comes a little bit more like when you're talking about actual plays that are happening in a game. But this goes right in line with what I was saying about the story. You'll hear this a lot in football coaching. Your tape is who you are as an individual, who you are as a team. Like the effort that you put out, the style of player you are, your personality as a player can come out on film and you want it to. That is a story, right? The film is a story of who you are as a person, as a player, but then like who we are as a team, as a unit, right? Because that's going to come out in the film.
What are some examples of like...
Yeah, can you give us like a specific example? Yeah.
Take the 49ers, for instance, right? Because you're in the Bay Area, Joanna. Because of their coach and their players, Christian McCaffrey and Deebo Samuel and like all these guys who have these really robust set of skills, they're really versatile. So they're thought of as this innovative, attack you a lot of different ways offense, right? And then Kyle Shanahan, who's thought of as one of the best offensive innovators in our sport right now, he's drawing up these plays for these great versatile players. And they're going out there and they're attacking these people all these different ways. So they're seen as this kind of juggernaut of an offense because of all the different ways.
Instead of just being run focused.
Yeah, instead of being like, oh yeah, we're gonna run it right at you and run it right down your throat. So I'll go back to a little bit of my background. Like when we were at Stanford, when Coach Harbaugh got there, and that was in my third year, there was very much an identity that it was like there were these smart guys who were more or less finesse players, right? So anytime we had good teams, it was because like, we're smarter than you. We're going to out-finesse you. We had really good skill. And never would a Stanford team up to that point have been associated with like rough, tough, we're going to out-physical you. Mm-hmm. We kind of took that and flipped it on its head. It was like, no, actually, we're going to be the bully. Like, we're going to go bully USC and Washington. But in football, right, that's desirable. Yeah.
I think what's important here is the power of storytelling and of legend building within the leadership of the team. And I feel like there were certain moments and symbols that were elicited in order to build the culture.
For sure. One that's central to the story of what we were doing at that time in Stanford football, to have a really good physical identity, a lot of it starts with big guys up front, which on offense, it's your offensive line, right? Like the center, the guards, the tackle, the tight end, you know, those guys who are blocking for the running back when you have a really physically imposing run game. And one of my good friends, Chris Marinelli, he's from Boston, and his dad, Jim, he was a tunnel worker and he was part of the local union. And he had this whole story behind this. And he came out and spoke to the offensive line and the team, and they developed this identity of these tunnel workers who in Boston had this like thankless job that they were underground, literally digging tunnels. For this intricate road system or pipes or whatever there was for, but like there's thankless, dangerous freaking job, but also they could build this great city of Boston. And then they likened it to what our offensive linemen were doing. They were doing this really grimy job of blocking for our skill players to be able to go gain yards and score touchdowns. So they were the tunnel workers union, the offensive line. But we built our identity around that as well. Of our coach at the time, even he brought blue collared shirts. He was like, we're going to be blue collar. You know, and again, like, you've been around time. Stanford,
no
like,
way. Yeah, you
know, with blue collarism, but it's not really
yeah.
like,
yeah,
that's what's associated with that. So it was flipping that a little bit and holding on to identities and stories like that.
Okay, I'm always surprised because I'm always like, we're gonna talk about X's and O's and like what that means and what we see in a tape, and it's always about something so much bigger. But I am actually super curious when you're watching the tape and you're thinking about this identity as a team and you're thinking about the relationships that will create a byproduct of winning. If a tape is your identity, can you walk us through? I see a tape in your specific team that you're coaching and your quarterback. What does that look like to see it and then polish from the tape or within the system of what created the situation shown in the tape?
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the difficulties, and I have so much respect for what you all do as writers, and let me tell you about your job for a second. As you're sitting there and you're crafting and you're thinking about what words to use or how to develop this character or where to go with the plot, I think one of the things I have so much respect for is as you're doing that, like there's not really an objective right answer, right? Like, it's not like a math problem where you're like, yeah, it turned out the right answer. That was the right thing. My point is you never really know if it's the right thing. Mm. There are elements of that in our polishing and our revision process. Like, there are so many levers to pull. There are so many variables that go into a football play. You know, there's so much communication that happens. The average football play lasts about 6 seconds. And so you think about the communication that happens leading up to that play And then the small amount of time that you have to react and respond and go take action on whatever it is, like all those processes are happening very, very fast. Okay. So much of those things are just learned and are trained habits. So much hinges on practice. And again, going back to the levers you're pulling, it's like, okay, do our guys just need to be better at the technique, right? Do they just need more drill work at this specific block? Or is it kind of like we talked about earlier? Is it a trust issue? Is us not being able to protect for the quarterback? Is that because the left tackle is not trusting, right? So they need more reps together. Or is it, that's just not a good play for us. Like we should be doing a different thing completely. And maybe we shouldn't be running the ball to this side. We should be running it to that side. Or maybe because of the defense we're playing, you know, there's just so maybe many the quarterback different
was holding on the ball.
Maybe the quarter, maybe. Yeah. And even like that, we have this term called self-scout, which is like, you're always, you know, going back to studying film. Part of our studying film is studying what we're doing, because there's another big part, which is like, okay, look at what the defense is doing. So we know how we want to play against them. But especially at the end of a season, you always do a big like self-scout project, like a deep dive. And it's everything in analytics, right? It's how much did we do this particular thing? How much were we aligned in this particular formation? And then you're trying to take a look at and deduce why was that group of plays successful or not. And again, kind of like with what you guys do, there's not always a real clear-cut answer. Like when you talk about protecting the quarterback, like when the quarterback drops back to pass, okay, if the defense hits him before he can throw it, that's a sack, right? So you'll watch your sack tape, all the times that your team got sacked, and you'll try to figure out on each play, well, what could have happened differently for us not to get sacked there? Did we just miss out? Could the quarterback have thrown it sooner? Was it a combination of the two things? You're trying to work back and say, okay, what happened? And then how can we make it better? There's an art form to it. Going back to the story of who you are in film,
yeah,
I think you still always have to have a North Star and like, who do we want to be as an offense?
Yeah.
Like, what do we want to do? We want to be a physical offense? Do we want to be an offense that throws the ball a lot? Because once you decide that, then you can work back from there.
How do you choose? Like in a story, I can just mess around on a paper and I can delete and I can try and then be like, ah, it doesn't work. But like for you, I mean, these are humans that they're not chess pieces, but they're actually humans. How do you decide which levers you're going to pull and which one? Like, I remember one time we were talking about just the conditioning of a team. Like, are they, have they conditioned? Are they lifting?
For sure. Like, are they losing stamina?
Yeah. How do you know? Like in a book, there's a point at which you're kind of like, I think it's done. It's polished. Yeah. Do you ever get to that point? How do you know if you pulled the right levers or not? For me, my head is spinning because I'm like, it's a constant guessing game, but it can't be a guessing game because you have something, you know what you're doing.
I wouldn't go as far to say it's a guessing game, but it does go back to what I was saying about the connective tissue, because that's where I think it comes back to the people.
Let me just say that's where for you, I think every coach has a different philosophy.
That's like, fair.
Without saying too much, you know, it's the off season. Your season ended first week in January. And so much of the past month has been witnessing Tubby to talk to different coaches
who
are, you know, interested in him maybe joining their staffs and hearing the different personalities and what do they believe in? What do they believe in about X's and O's? What do they believe in culturally about their team? When they get pressed, when it's a hard moment in the season, what shows up for them? Is it, okay, well, things are hard, so we need to work harder. We need to stay up all night. We need to come up with a whole new system. We need to peel it back. Maybe we need to pare it down and just simplify it. Everyone's got different philosophy. And so one thing I'm struck by, you hear Tubby to the community and it's kind of keeping it really high level. But I think what specifically that looks like is you're such a believer in people in a way that is really unique, I think, in this business, but generally speaking. So if things aren't working on offense, and so you're pulling all the levers you mentioned, maybe it's footwork, maybe it's trust, maybe it's different plays. I don't think a ton of people consider the way you do that maybe you should talk to the quarterback and ask what is they like. What about this isn't resonating for you? What do you wish if you were in charge? What would you be calling? Because it matters because they're the human that's getting the ball snapped to them almost every single play. So I think that informs the way you're pulling levers and which ones you're pulling. Is that fair?
No, absolutely. And that's absolutely in the direction I was going.
I'm just going to answer for you.
Yeah. Thank you, Coach Caroline.
No, I mean, you could probably answer a lot of this because what I believe about coaching is what I believe about parenting, is what I believe about life. Yeah. Like, I just don't believe in silos in life. Yeah. I just believe strongly in being who you are. And I believe that about our players. I want players to bring their full selves because we're going to be the best team when everyone's able to do that. And we can honor that in everyone. There is that element, like giving people belief and ownership and investing them in the process. But then it's just like, it's just knowing people. So as I'm watching the film, it's not happening in a vacuum. I'm not watching some random person that I've never seen before that I have to guess at. you know, he's actually predisposed to maybe run a little bit sooner than he should because of conversations I've had or whatever else. And Caroline's right. Not everybody thinks about it this way. Yeah. You know, it's also something that I learned, you know, if you talk about story again, or you talk about my journey, one of the best pieces of advice I got about coaching was coach and lead as yourself. Don't try to be anybody else. I've had the great privilege of being around some really, really good coaches. And I totally get the can happen to folks, probably in any industry, is they come up under something, a leader, a mentor, and they just try to emulate it, right? Because like, maybe that was successful. And so why would I not just try to do what I saw was successful?
Working. Yeah.
Yeah. And at the same point in time, like in my profession, when you're leading a locker room or leading a franchise, people follow genuineness. Yeah. Genuineness of work. People follow
genuineness.
People sniff out somebody who's not being themselves.
Right. Very yeah, absolutely. Quickly.
The locker room is this really specific ecosystem that so many different people come in and personalities converge and all these conversations happen that like you hear about the locker room a lot because it has such a strong pull in the culture and identity of a team and a building. I think that's one of the best pieces of advice I got was just like lead as yourself, be yourself, because that's going to give you the best avenue to lead in an effective way.
I feel like I listen to you and your siblings talk on the phone in your own silos, whether it be social work or whether it be sales or medicine or coaching, the way that y'all talk about your continued understanding of your peoplehood and Samoan peoplehood and everything from your history to your genealogy to your DNA. And so I feel like when you talk about be who you are, I see that in all that you do in your coaching.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's so clearly reflected. It's like you were saying, you're not a different person as a coach. Not that I've been in the locker room, but I can imagine, you know?
What does that mean? Like, what is, like, I want to hear you talk about that a little bit more. I'm always just so blown away. But the more you learn, it all just clicks for you. Like, this is what I've been doing. This is why I'm drawn to that sort of leadership and not that sort of leadership.
Yeah, actually, yes. Can we pull on that one for you? Yeah. What's your story and how are you revising as you've learned about coaching?
Yeah. Yeah, when we're speaking about being a whole person, like my two big buckets in my life are being a dad and husband and member of my family and being a member of a team and football coach. As I venture out and I have other interests and hobbies, one of my biggest callings almost is just learning about my identity as a Samoan man and the history of our people, even as they found these islands across the Pacific. Caroline asked about our siblings and the diaspora of Pacific people across the world and the different industries we're in. It seems to always come back to our shared DNA of what makes us Samoan. As I think about what that means for me, I think about the boldness of the people to set out on the open ocean. I think about the resourcefulness and the ingenuity of these navigators to use the ocean currents and the whales and the stars and all these things to like literally find their way from New Zealand to Hawaii to Easter Island, this huge, vast ocean. When we talk about wholeness or the holistic nature of a person or community, I can't separate it from the things I'm uncovering even about myself and my history. I listen to a lot of folks across our Pacific community talk about traditional knowledge. And I just listened to this podcast. It was really cool. He was talking about navigation specifically and the multidimensional nature of, I've just referenced it, but like the path of the whales and bird migration and the stars and how we used all those things together, right? To literally have a GPS and know where we were going. And so I can't help but hear that and go like, yeah, that makes sense to me. Multidimensional, multifaceted approach to building a team. We talked about the revision process or like the polishing. There's not one answer. That's why I think football is so fascinating to me because it is so multidimensional.
Yeah.
It does have so many levers to pull and variables and people. I just have a strong belief that my understanding at a genetic level of these multidimensional systems, I think that helps me. I think that helps inform what I believe as a coach and a father and all those different things. So, I mean, I certainly think that's how I bring myself and my story into my role and what I do.
I feel like as you're talking, well, first, like when you're talking about coaching, I feel like so much of that I connect with as a teacher, as an educator. Yeah. Like there's no teaching that's happening. There's no learning that's happening unless I have relationships. But then as you were continuing, what's resonant for me is I feel very much like that on my journey as an author, that the longer I've written stories, the more I have been curious about my own family and my own history and the history of my people. And the more that I have learned this history, the more grounded and embodied and powerful I feel as a human and the more I feel like I understand who I am. That's not something I grew up feeling. What stands out again is knowing that connection to your history and culture, but also connected to who you are and your voice and your authenticity. There's a clear connection there to writing in terms of understanding who I am, the stories we want to tell, not trying to write like other people, not trying to speak like other people, but like recognizing and understanding who we are and how much, even though the skill sets are so different at the core, that's still at the heart of the work that you're doing and the work I think that we're doing. You have a unique perspective into the world of Kidlit. And then Caroline, vice versa, a very unique perspective into the world of football. So this is really for both of you. But in what other ways do you feel like there are parallels between football and writing for kids in terms of process? Like, I think we scratched the surface, but it would be helpful to help make the connections really clear with both of you and your particular vantage points.
Yeah. Can I start here?
Babe, the floor is yours.
I already kind of referenced one as I was thinking about like the polishing revision process. The similarity there is worth mentioning again. And I know, Joanna, you said you can get to the end of a story and be like, that seems done. But I also know, hearing Caroline, that like, even when you get to that point, it's not like the bar is literally at 100%. You're like,
you're just like, I'm tired. I'm done.
And it's like, not good enough. But like, at some point, you have to say enough is enough because you have a belief in the process that you went through to get there.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. That's huge. Say that one more time. Process. I'll stay for you.
We have argued about this and the way that you describe this so many times. So I'm dying.
Caroline doesn't like how I describe. I use the phrase sometimes like it can't be purely results oriented because you have to be more concerned with the process because if you just like, oh, that didn't work. Let me throw that out.
That we threw an interception. Clearly,
that's not a good play. It goes back to what lever do you have to pull? And look, past a certain point, sometimes it doesn't matter why it's not working. Yeah, we got to throw it out because it just is not working. But I just so strongly believe in the process to get there. The process of putting a play in to run on game day, or the process of why we do a certain drill to work on a given technique, or whatever the case.
Or the way you hold yourself. Like if you're struggling, it's not throwing everything out and starting over. It's not inciting panic. It's trusting in your system and in each other and then for that moment and then you can push through.
Can I do a sidebar question?
For sure.
Because I also know not every system is one that you've trusted necessarily, even if you've been part of it.
Yeah.
Like how do you know when it's time to change the system?
The difficulty of that question is like when you're not the decision maker and the buck doesn't stop with you on the direction of a system, you have to find ways to operate within that system to the best of your ability, within your beliefs, right? So I think there are times or have been times where maybe I don't think a system is working for a certain reason and I can voice that to the appropriate people, but that may or may not change things. Yeah. So, I mean,
you're good at drawing a circle around what you can control and then diving into that. You make it so much more about people you can impact than pointing the finger or just like, ugh.
Yeah, which is, I think, is important. And you go back to like my upbringing in the Fasa Moa, like when you go back to a team about self, identifying your role and not staying in your role, but like maximizing your role and then looking for opportunities to expand your role, but also try to elicit change. I'm
sorry, I totally sidetracked you. The question was more about like the connections between.
Oh, you know what? The other connection, I don't know if you guys will agree with this, but like, one of the most fascinating things to me learning about the Kidlit world was the relationship between the author and illustrator. Mm. And like, there's really not, in most cases, there's not a lot of interaction.
Yeah.
And there are times in what we do, there has to be a marriage of people. And look,
offense and defense, are you saying?
No,
that's what I was thinking, but I was like, I'm the dodo. I'm not going to say it out loud.
That's certainly one place, but even personalities converging or like different style, different systems, like, being at Stanford, there were times where maybe a coach came from this system and this coach came from this system, and you have to marry up these things that seemingly don't match and how those things come together, or even just the interpretation by the illustrator of what the author is trying to.
I think what I'm hearing you say too is like there's space between people that creates the ultimate product. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Like, but I feel like it also goes back to the trust. That's what came up for me. Is like, there's a trust in that process.
Sort of alchemy. That's
you guys have to trust the process of your editor and the folks that are helping connect that. It's like the space in between. We have a saying in Samoan, right? That's like ileva, like the space in between us. Mm-hmm. But it's like a very tangible thing going back to the connective tissue. Mm-hmm. But like the way that you have to.
Ooh, I love that.
You all have to trust the process. And we have to trust that too and trust that connection that's going to ultimately be the best thing for.
I love that. I also think on that last note, how we talked to so many different creators who all have their different way of whether it's writing longhand or whether it's pantsing, this and that, that at some point, the way you do it's the way you do it. Owning that, having faith in that.
Your own
and system. Then leaning into it. Yeah. And I think finding your magic, not second guessing everything, not letting anxiety fill the space, keeping it creative, keeping flow, like as much as we can create these pathways of creative flow and expression between the coaches and players, between yourself as you're brainstorming, between us on the page.
I feel like trusting the process is a lot.
That is for sure a correlation.
Instead of constantly trusting the process and not compulsively questioning the process.
Yeah, at the same time. Knowing you can figure it out to get there.
Yes.
Yeah. Another thing that stands out is I feel like we often think of writing as such a singular individual activity. Yeah. And the more you talk about community and connections and trust, I feel like, I mean, I think that's one reason we started this podcast, right, Caroline? Like, because it is such a community. I was like trying to think, how is my writing better because of community, other than the obvious of someone actually reading my work? But it's such a community. You just talk about the process of editors and illustrators or even in a novel. But I actually feel like just the community of authors, particularly in the kidlit spaces that I've been fortunate to be part of, feel so connected and aligned in terms of shared goals and missions. So even if they're not reading my writing, they're shaping me as a human and helping me find my voice more in clarity. I don't know. That's not a formed thought, but I feel like there's something about writing as a community and not writing as an individual. Sure.
But even as you guys talk about, what do you guys call them? Comps or?
Comp titles.
Comp titles, things that you guys read that's in the same vein or the same space. That's a similarity as well. Like you find inspiration. Like I find inspiration watching other, like I study success. Like I watch successful offenses. Like how did they do that? What are they doing? Like what is about that? You know, and I think that's another correlation. I see you guys use comp titles.
Study.
Who was it that was on that was talking about, some people think that you shouldn't read stuff that's in the same subject matter.
Oh, Mick Stone was saying she reads stuff.
And she was like,
he's our number one stan.
I feel the same way. It's like, I'm going to watch everything. There are some coaches who maybe like poo-poo, like, we're going to run a very similar play against this defense because it worked. It's like, no, I'm all for that. Yeah. If we have a good reason for it and it fits our personality and who we are and our story, like, absolutely, let's go.
Yeah.
So in a similar vein, the way that y'all find inspiration in reading each other's work or, you know, like you said, listening to each other's voices or even this.
That's when one of your values is collaboration. And you talk about like, the best rooms are the ones that you pick guys that are smarter than you. And you have this, that have different backgrounds. And let's all throw down. It's like the best critique groups, right? Like are coming from totally different places. They know your goals.
Unless you have Caroline, who's just the best critique partner. So she's like,
you just quit that. Okay, I'm also aware of time, but I've got to throw one of the
things. I know, because I had another thought and then we can move on. But
not that we want us all this time here, but one thing that is just true in any system, but who has the most space in the industry, right? So I think that like the sport of football, like you were saying, Joe, I've come to learn through being around your family, through being around the actual sport, watching how you parent our kids through football in the backyard. There's so much real beauty in team sport, period. And then of course you layer a money-making capitalist beast of a system on top of it. And that it's like, can be as toxic as all get out. So I don't want to paint some picture that like the NFL is. Obviously it's not immune to all that. In fact, it perpetuates so much of what's wrong. So, and I think that's same with publishing, right? Like the exploitative nature of publishing oftentimes, when I think about like one tangibly, how might that show up in your story? I think about how your Uncle Jack, you know, you're this Polynesian kid or Samoan kid with long hair. And Uncle Jack was telling you, like, if you want to get taken seriously in the recruiting cycle, you better cut your hair off. You're a quarterback.
Really?
Yeah. And that's his Samoan uncle trying to prepare you to operate in a system.
Yeah. I mean, he comes from a generation that, and I'm sure people like me have similar stories, when my dad's generation was the first generation born in the United States. Mm. His parents immigrated from Samoa. And so much of the language and tone was assimilate, right? And so like that was what was beaten into their head. Like, don't speak Samoan, speak English.
Yep.
You know, and so like that's what he knew. He knew I wasn't going to get an opportunity as a quarterback because I had long hair, right? Or because I had a Polynesian tattoo. It was going to be the opposite. Exactly. So he was just trying to do right by me and have the best. But sorry, I kind of cut you off.
No. I mean, it's all such pure, beautiful, loving, familial intention. And that is the reality of the system that you're operating in, too. I mean, if there's the quarterbacks in throughout history, numerically, were all white for so long because of racist beliefs about the quarterback and who could play that well.
And who's smart enough to make the pass, right?
And so if that's a foundational belief in the system, and then now bring that all the way up to coaching, who are the coaches that might best lead? What's a leader look like?
Yeah.
When who are the ones who are going to get the best, the most chances? It doesn't matter how many times they may have unsuccessful seasons, who are going to be the ones that get the next?
Absolutely.
So,
this is why we hate the NFL. Love it because of Tavita.
No, it's just that those are real things that impact not just personally you, but I mean the water you're swimming in. And it's similar to publishing.
Yeah.
So I think that's something I think about often is everything is everything. And you see that time and time again. So it's how do you operate within a system? When are times that you don't want to, and how do you
still function within it?
Yeah.
Okay. The last thought on this is makes me think as an author about the levers we pull. Cause sometimes for me anyways, I'm thinking about the story and the plot line and the characters and what's not working and the language and the words. And sometimes it's me needing to pull back.
Yes.
I actually just talked about this with my therapist this week where she was like, you know, it's great that you're writing these things from your childhood and you're working through some of that in your stories and talking about it with me. I was telling her, I think that like having these conversations is helping me get to a space that I can explore them more in the story more honestly, where I wasn't ready to before. Just the emotional truth or things that happen that we've talked about with Eyes That Weave. And there were some triggering things that then, there's so many levers that impact your writing. And it's not always just about the skill and the tape watching and the revision. That's standing out to me. And I just need to process that. Anyways. Okay, can we shift gears? I really honestly could talk to you about this forever because I love hearing about football from you. It's like, okay, ready? Shifting. Can you please tell us, we're entering the most important part of the conversation now. An embarrassing story or fact about Caroline?
Yeah.
What? Is this a pre-overshare overshare?
Here we go.
This is a dish on Caroline question.
Okay, I have a really funny story.
What?
That kind of relates to like football and us meeting. So like early on in Caroline and I's relationship, here I meet this girl from Texas, who's like been around football and her brothers have played sports. And like I will place a little
I played sports.
Yeah, forget her brothers. She played sports. Okay? Yeah, Caroline, be quiet. You need to step aside.
A little bit of the blame here on Gary Cusin.
Caroline's dad,
my father in love, Caroline's dad, because he's one of the most over the top cheering on supporter of his kids and people he loves, myself included. That like he built this one up a lot, and in her, especially
now, I know exactly what story.
Especially in her athletic career, and she is an athlete, and she does have a quickness, and
good athlete.
She's got a little quick twitch, and so like early on in our relationship, I was the starting quarterback for our football team. We're walking like in the parking lot and somehow we get on the conversation of like speed and how fast we can run and stuff like that. And Caroline in so many words is like, well, you guys can't be that fast. Like you're big.
I'm sure I said it just like that.
Well, I mean,
it was ruder than that actually.
Culminating in her literally saying like, well, I can beat you in a race. And I said, what? And she goes, yeah, no, I can beat you in a race. She goes, I'm really fast. And I was like, okay. Okay. And so no joke, like we race and it went exactly how, dear listeners, you thought it would.
So Caroline won. Is that what happened? Yeah. She got her butt whooped.
I think it was a much tighter race than your, I think history is was written by the winners.
Was that the point in the race where I started running backwards? Or?
I did have a renovated sense of self, but specifically speed.
I don't think people understand sometimes these 6'5", 330-pound linemen.
Yeah, real big boys.
How athletic they are. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, real tooting your own horn
over
here.
No. I am a specimen of the human species.
They could beat me in a race because I think I'd smoke them. Well, now, fast forward. I mean, how long have we been together? Forever. And our son, Afi, looked at me. That is so funny. I never crafted that. Yeah. He looked at me the other day. We were getting donuts, and he's like, "Mom, I could crush you in a race." I was like, are you kidding me? And he was like, "No, I could whoop you." And I just looked him like dead in the eyes, and I was like, "Go outside right now." And we went to the sidewalk, and I looked at him,
Doc Martin,
dead ass, and I was like, "Son, there will be a day where you will crush me, and it is not today." And we raced, and I whooped his ass down and back, and he was just with a little tears. I'm like, "Cry him now, cry him."
That's what you get.
Family.
Yes.
I love that so much. Okay, now I have two bonus questions for you from my kids. I told them I was going to interview you today, and I asked if they had any questions for you. Carter's question, I had to take notes because you know I was going to forget these names. Carter's question is, who's your favorite 49er? Is it McCaffrey or Purdy?
Oh, easy answer.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's not fair because I have a connection to Christian. I help recruit.
Which one is Christian?
Christian McCaffrey is the running back.
Okay, got it.
And I have a connection to Christian. I helped recruit him out of high school from Valor Christian in Colorado. So I got to know Christian as a high school junior, you know, and I mean, obviously I'm so happy for all his success. And it's been just incredible to be able to watch him go on and become who he has. But like,
very sweet. You have the funniest stories of when you recruited him and like your car got stuck in the snow outside his house. You had to stay at his house. And
I'm just going to take you back to the bio and say so many famous people he's recruited and who he's responsible for their beautiful growth and fame. And
Happy the headline.
One part of the responsibility.
Singularly responsible. Yeah.
So that was Carter's question. Are you ready for Isla's? You're not ready for Isla's question.
Oh, absolutely.
Her question is, when are you coming back?
Oh, as soon as possible,
Can
Isla.
We just talk about their kids for
and as by soon coming as- back, she said, when are you moving back?
Oh.
And I was like, that's her question. Like five seconds after, I was like, what's your question? Immediately, she was like, when are they coming back?
Okay, the joy of joys was getting to love on.
And then she said, I miss them.
Oh, man. I have these memories of like, even when we were mid-pandemic and shelter in place, that y'all would come over and park up on the curb. Right, like kind of on the sidewalk so that we could get as close as safely possible and be in each other's presence and talk and get updates. And we miss those kiddos.
There's
a
team here. I'm just saying, I know it's not now, but I've mentioned a few times. Okay. All right. Now I'm ready to move on. Are you all ready for the overshare? As you know, it's a happy hour. You are our biggest fan. What's an overshare? It could be funny, silly, infuriating, embarrassing, all of the above, whatever you feel comfortable sharing.
It could be a love poem that you wrote just for me.
I do have something related to your career or something that's horribly embarrassing for Caroline.
Well, I already told the embarrassing Caroline story, so this will be an embarrassing one for me. Okay. But it's just kind of a funny story that happened. And I think it's appropriate, especially because it includes my former coach and the first coach I had a coaching job under, which was Jim Harbaugh. This was like early on in coaching. And I'm just getting my feet wet and figuring out like what the profession is all about. And of course, like one of the big shocks getting into this profession is like the hours spent, just the amount of time, especially in season. And like my football player self was certainly not ready for this. Oh yeah, it'll be like we do and we'll work out and we'll go home. No, you're staying at the office. It's late hours. Yeah. It's all the things.
Wow.
This was like a staff meeting that we would have weekly and you generally get together. It's offensive side, defensive side. The room is packed. And so sitting around the main table are all the position coaches. And then as a graduate assistant or quality control, kind of an intern coach, you're further on the outside. So sometimes you're kind of lost in the mix a little bit. But I was sitting in one of those seats. And like, again, this schedule was a shock to my system.
Give us an idea what was happening. Because I know your schedule this year, and we've talked about it on the podcast before. But what was the schedule like at that time?
Oh, just, you know, late nights. So especially like early in the week.
Late nights for you all, though. That's like midnight. Yeah? Yeah,
midnight or later.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because I feel like late nights for most people is like 8 or 9.
Right. Yeah. Midnight or later. But especially in those roles in a season, you just have so many days to get ready for the game each week.
So we just talked about like, we'll go back and we'll watch all the blitz cut up. Someone had to go cut them up. Someone had to go look at all the practice tape or the footage of the team you're playing.
Yeah, and cut it all up.
And then put them all together. And so anyway, that was what he was doing at this.
That's what I was doing. I was doing a lot of the grunt work or like drawing the diagrams of like the pictures that we show.
Yeah.
So I'm at the table and the whole staff is around and just the head coach is addressing everyone. It's a closed conference room with the entire staff in there. So like it's getting a little warm. And
oh, this isn't where I thought we were.
And I'm a lot sleepy. I remember him talking and like, oh, my eyes are getting droopy. I'm going.
Yeah.
Going. And hopefully me sitting in the back, like, and I'm not intentionally trying to fall asleep at this point, but at least looking back, I was like, yeah, there was a chance nobody saw me. But like, as I'm falling asleep, Jim Harbaugh makes eye contact with me. And I don't know if y'all have ever experienced this, but like, you feel yourself falling asleep. It's consciously happening, yeah. And you can't do anything to stop it. My eyelids are literally looking me dead in the eye as my eyes close. And he just goes, "Tavita." And I'm like, "Hey." And he goes, "Your eyes look like two piss holes in the snow." First of all, I don't know what that means. He just like drew all the attention to me as I'm falling asleep, as he's mid-sentence making eye contact with me. Like, was mortified. I was like, "I'm never going to coach again." He kind of laughed it off. But man, that was just one of my earliest memories of like, and now I'm a coach. Oh my
God. And now I drink coffee.
Now I drink coffee in all its forms.
Yeah, in all its forms. Oh my gosh. Thank you for sharing. You are the best.
He was really wondering which other overshoes.
What was the one you thought he was going to share?
Yeah, what's the one you thought?
I didn't. Well, I realized one wouldn't be appropriate. There are just too many.
There's a lot of them.
And then I was like, I was hooking up at the library, but that is irrelevant. You know, making out around campus. You know.
I don't think that was me you were making out with at the library.
Dun, 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 dun.
Maybe it wasn't. Who knows?
Overshare?
Yeah. The one thing that we didn't get to, but we don't have time, is just thinking about football with kids. And like when you're literally out there with the boys and Monty was
coaching
like,
them.
Yeah. And you're like, he's like coaching them and they're falling apart into a million pieces because they didn't catch the ball that time. And the way that your affect towards them, you're like, yeah, be angry. That's great. Yeah. And now we're going to use that. And you're going to refocus and we're going to get right back at it. And just the way that you honor their feelings, but also are training them. I don't know. I think it's
really I think it's also really relatable to what we were talking about. Like being a coach and being a dad, I think we can all relate to this as parents. The other thing it makes me think of in our conversation is just like, are you pulling the right levers?
Yeah.
Like, are you doing this the right way? Like you're always wondering as a parent. Yeah.
Like when you right call, you're like, do I force them to go to practice or not? Yeah. Like sports are such a container for it.
Such a container. Such a great platform to be able to talk about some of those things. So even like Manu, if he gets super frustrated and wants to give up on something, you know, so we talk a lot about being able to focus on your breath and refocus yourself so that you can catch the ball the next time. Because if you just stay in that heightened emotion all the time, right? And again, that's
But I will say like there are times if I didn't have you around, I would probably like stop the game and be like, okay, Manu, let's get control right now. Like we need you to do the Dr. Becky, do whatever. And you're like, nope. Like, I don't need to be, I certainly don't want him to think that it's wrong to feel that heightened emotion. Actually, that's critical. That's like mission critical to be able to care about your sport.
And keep playing.
And work through it. And so I just love
it. It's so helpful because I think I live in two natural spaces. There's the one that's like, suck that up. It doesn't hurt that bad. We push, we go.
Yeah.
And I can see why that's how I function. And so I can see why that's not always the healthiest. That's just where I'm at. And there's the other world, like gentle, we appreciate all their emotions. We let them feel the things. We give them space. And then there's a happy medium because I feel like if you're too far on your side, but it's helpful to have the coaching. Like the other time when I was like, how often do you yell at your kids? You know, like I don't really yell, but sometimes I feel like I need to, or do I force them to do something he doesn't want to do?
Right.
Or like in a moment when he's having a big feeling and he's frustrated or she's frustrated and I'm always in this balance of like, how do I hold the feeling? Because I'm very quickly like, and I'm done with that feeling. We need to keep going, you know?
Yes. I feel like that's so interesting. I mean, they have so many psychologists come and talk to the players about what does that look like, especially for a quarterback to be able to, you just threw a near interception. You've got to go right back in the huddle, do this again, and not let the fear you're going to throw a second, you know?
Yeah,
not
like you've like hundreds of thousands of people just, you know, screaming and sending at you.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly. But I don't know. I think it's a rad container to play with like.
Did you just say rad?
She said rad.
Yeah. Did I not say that?
It's also far out.
It is also groovy. But I love that. I love getting to watch how you channel the coaching of your profession into the parenting coaching of our children in the backyard.
Yeah.
So good for you. I love watching YouTube.
10 out of 10.
Gross.
No notes. Yeah.
No notes.
Wow. Sorry, I mean, that was the one else in the library.
Yeah, seriously. Jeez.
I'm like, on that note, it was lovely having you on, Tavita.
If you enjoy this podcast, we would be so grateful if you would please take a moment to do any or all of the following things.
Follow or subscribe by tapping on the little plus sign or follow next to Kidlet Happy Hour in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
And while you're there, we would love if you could leave a rating, preferably one with 5 stars, as well as a review.
And don't forget about Patreon, where you can help support production costs, ask us questions, get even more overshares, and receive a delicious thank you treat from JK Chocolate. Check out patreon.com/kidlethappyhourpodcast.
Thank you so much for being here, and we hope to see you back for the next episode.